From inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer! And somehow it's answered.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point. Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Ben Shulman, Owen Valentine. And we've got a win under Syracuse football's belt. We're going to take a look at pretty golden opportunity for them to get back to 500 as they take on Duke this Saturday at 12:30. Countdown to kickoff on WAER.org or 88.3 FM at noon. And it's an 0-4 Duke team. It's not a great Duke team. I think they're slightly better than 0-4, but they're not really that good. And, you know, Syracuse has had its kinks, but things seem to have worked themselves out once again, though, against a pretty crummy Georgia Tech team. So we're in that limbo right now. You know, you're a little bit more on the Syracuse football hype train than you were after weeks 1 and 2, but you're still only kind of 1 foot in, 1 foot out. You're ready to get off at the next stop, wherever that might be. But I'm sure Syracuse fans are going to want to ride the train as long as they possibly can. And, you know, you've got 2 weeks looking ahead in Duke and Liberty that provide you an opportunity to get above 500. And we've got, you know, a lot to talk about today in terms of Syracuse Duke. And a little bit later on, we'll hear from Wes Durham, who gives his immaculate insight into the state of the ACC, state of Syracuse football, and a little bit of a look into this Syracuse Duke matchup as well. But Ben, I mean, as he talks about, as we're going to talk about, a golden opportunity for Syracuse to grab its second win of the season and get back to 500.
Perhaps the most winnable game left on the schedule. Now, a lot of people are going to say, what are you talking about? They play Liberty. First of all, I don't think that game's a guarantee still. And second of all, that Liberty football team is playing pretty well this year. It's crazy to me thinking about Duke right now at 0-4. When I was a freshman in college, Duke was 8-5 that year in 2018. Syracuse was 10-3. And now they really meet both Cutcliffe and Babers kind of at a low point almost in their coaching eras at the respective schools. But this should be a fun matchup. I think once again, Syracuse is my favorite here, although actually I didn't pick them last week. You did, and you're the smart guy for picking them against Georgia Tech.
Sometimes you get a gut feeling. You know, it's the 315 residency, the 315 area code attached to my phone number that just, you get the tingle sometimes when you know they're going to shock people when you're completely gone with them. Sometimes you get the feeling. And I will say I was 1 week off because I thought they were going to come back and do it in week 2. And that also wasn't the case. So I'll say I was right last week when they played Georgia Tech, but I made the same prediction when they played Pitt and was incredibly wrong on that one. So sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But the 22 years behind me of Syracuse football, sometimes you get the tingle when you know they're going to do something that they shouldn't necessarily do.
And I think this matchup, for a lot of the reasons that the Georgia Tech matchup was favorable for the Orange, will help Syracuse win again. I mean, Duke has struggled to hold the football. They are averaging nearly 4 turnovers a game. Chase Brice has thrown 7 interceptions in his first 4 starts. They put the ball on the ground a lot too, a lot of fumbles from this Duke team. Not to mention as well, it's a struggling defense, kind of like Georgia Tech. They do have a better pass rush than Syracuse saw about a week and a half ago. But again, I think this is an opportunity for a weaker Syracuse offense to thrive a little bit against not an exceptionally strong defense, and definitely another opportunity for the FBS's leading turnover forcing defense to force a couple more turnovers against Chase Brice and the Duke Blue Devils.
You know, you've got a Syracuse football team that, I mean, even with last week's bye, they've only played 3 games, still lead the nation in turnovers. And that is something that has really kept them in games. You look at the losses, you look at the UNC loss, you look at the Pitt loss, the defense has kept them in games. They're creating turnovers, creating opportunities for a struggling offense. And the offense has started to work some things out. So I think that it's by no means, you know, a back offense for Syracuse. The kinks are not gone. There are still issues. There are play calling issues. There are DeVito issues. There are O-line issues. And I know Sean Tucker has figured some things out at the running back spot, but I'm not sure how sustainable he is. I think he's going to be good. I think he's going to be able to continue that. But I don't know if he's going to be a 100-yard rusher game in and game out. I can't imagine he will be. And so you've got to continue to build off that. And the turnovers have been able to do it. And you've got really good production out of the Syracuse secondary. Obviously, such a highly touted unit coming into the season. But another issue that, you know, is still kind of flown under the radar, we have no update on Andre Sisco right now. Will he play? Will he not play? What is that injury that he sustained pregame against Georgia Tech? We don't have much information in terms of the details. So, you know, that is a huge question mark looming over this game, because yes, Syracuse was able to pull it together against Georgia Tech, but Duke, I think, is slightly better than GT and might be able to do a little bit more offensively. Obviously, you've got Chase Bryce. Syracuse wants to get their revenge on him after, 2 years ago. We won't discuss that necessarily in a game that that they should have won. But, you know, it is what it is. He comes in. He's not been great. But, you know, if Sisco's not there and he has the ability to do some big things, and I don't know exactly where I sit right now, but the defense has looked good. I think they can continue it, and they can continue to put the offense in good situations. The offense needs to continue to capitalize, as you started to see. But once again, the narrative of the first 2 weeks was the offense's inability to capitalize on those big opportunities, starting with possession on the opponent's, you know, 30-yard line, 40-yard line, and not being able to score more than a field goal. They've started to figure it out. They've got to continue that momentum with Duke this week, and they got to continue that momentum in 2 weeks with Liberty. Obviously, you don't want to look too far ahead, but they've got an opportunity here to start to roll and start to pick up some momentum.
Dino Babers said in his Monday press conference, referring to Andre Sisco, a lower body extremity, which that's a description I'm familiar with as a hockey fan, because that's the most nondescript description ever. Yeah. It literally means the injury occurred below his hip. So it's a lower body injury, which I think we all kind of knew, understanding that Sisco collided with Ed Hendricks and then limped off the field before the Georgia Tech game. And I don't know anything that you don't know, but just the phrasing that Dino has used, some of the tweets that Sisco has put out in the meantime, I am not expecting Andre Sisco to be in the lineup. And I agree with you that that is a major difference for the Syracuse defense. I wouldn't be so ready to just declare that the 3-3-5 can operate without Sisco just because they stopped Jeff Sims last week. There was a lot of penetration from the Georgia Tech run game into the second level and into the secondary as well. And this is a Duke team that is known for running well. Georgia Tech's not really a running football team. They adjusted.
Yeah.
Duke brings back Deion Jackson and Mateo Durant. These guys put up big yards for them last year. And this year, between them, Jackson's averaging 4 yards per carry, Durant 6.3. So I think if the Blue Devils can get rolling in the run game, they might be able to keep up with whatever Syracuse is putting up offensively a lot better than the Yellow Jackets were a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, because as we've seen, and I know the numbers are not, you know, too telling in this, but the middle of the 3-3-5 has been vulnerable to the run game. And you saw it in the first 2 weeks, and not as much last week, but the run game has been, you know, very successful against Syracuse in terms of, you know, being able to get that consistent 4 or 5 yard gain, those early down gains that are so crucial to you working a drive and pulling a drive together. And, you know, you hate to speak in hypotheticals, but, you know, with regards to Sisco, I mean, there have been some very tough rumblings that you've started to hear. I know I've heard a few things. Mike McAllister, now of SI Now covering Syracuse football, mentioned that, you know, he's been hearing some things that could, you know, in theory lead to a season ending injury, which would be massive in terms of, you know, Sisco is on so many guys' draft boards, let alone such a crucial piece to this defense. And that is something that, you know, this defense showed it could play without, but it's going to be tough to recover from if that is the case. And, you know, you hate to speak in those hypotheticals, but that seems like, you know, with some of the stuff you've heard, that you hate to see, because those rumblings don't typically, especially with a guy like McAllister, you don't typically hear those rumblings out of nowhere. There's typically something behind it. So, you know, something that you've got to keep an eye out, because they've said nothing. And I think if it was good news, they would have said a little bit more. And if he was going to be back in 2 weeks, I think they would have said he's going to be back in 2 weeks. The silence is tough to hear, because, you know, when there's nothing being said there, you know, the mind starts to wander, and you don't know what it's going to be. But it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to play without him in theory this weekend, and however long he's out. But, you know, some of the new pieces have also shown some really good success, and have jumped right into the system fine. So, you know what, maybe Tony White's 3-3-5 is foolproof at this point. And, you know, the changes, or the pieces are fully interchangeable, and he's just going to keep the clock ticking, keep the clock, just interchangeable parts, let it all roll out. But I am, I'm curious to see if this is something that is a little bit more, you know, long lived, how the Syracuse defense will go in on a full, you know, season or a few more games without Cisco, because I don't think the success they had against Georgia Tech is necessarily the most sustainable thing.
Yeah, you mentioned the young pieces, and I'm sure when I talked about Cisco not being there and there being problems, people thought, you know, Rob Hanna was great last week. He had an interception. He led the team in tackles. Jahad Carter had an interception. He was great. This isn't a knock on either of those guys. Most FBS teams won't succeed relying on true freshmen to play in that many key roles. Mm-hmm. You can't have guys with that little experience and expect them to show out every single week. Rob Hanna might go out there and be just as good next week, and maybe he's a star. But if he's not, it doesn't mean he's bad. He just hasn't played a ton of college football yet. And to expect him to have, you know, 7, 8, 9 tackles, stop the run, and be able to force turnovers is just too much to ask out of someone who's a freshman and has only played in really this game, like barely this past game, the Georgia Tech game. Didn't really play much before that. So, again, as you said, it's tough to speak in hypotheticals. I agree with you. I'd be surprised to see Andre Cisco this week against Duke. But if he is there, it's a huge boost to Syracuse. Yeah. If he isn't, it's a major loss.
Syracuse-Duke is going to be 12:30 on Saturday. Ben was in the Dome 2 weeks ago. I'll be in the Dome this week, getting you some inside looks from what's going on in there, and ideally some more exclusive looks than what you're seeing on the television screen pregame. So keep it locked at Ostrom Avenue Pod during the game for our thoughts, our tidbits, anything we see, Ben from, you know, the TV broadcast, me from inside the Dome, and to get those thoughts once again at Ostrom Avenue Pod on Twitter. Shout out to you guys. We breached the century mark on Twitter. It's been a long time coming. So we thank you for helping us get there. You know, maybe we can keep that success up with our podcast streaming services at, you know, Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating on there. Write us a review. It goes a long way. But we've got a guy right now to talk to that is got, you know, some of the best knowledge and just an overall amazing guy to talk to. We talk a little NFL. We talk the ACC landscape. We talk Syracuse football. And, you know, basically everything that you could find in between those lines as well. Wes Durham with a great conversation just a few minutes ago.
We're joined by Wes Durham, the radio voice of the Atlanta Falcons, as well as college football and basketball for the ACC Network, and the host of Packer and Durham, the ACC Network morning sports show. Wes, thank you for coming on today. How are you doing?
I'm great, Ben. Good to be with you and Owen. Hope you guys are well, too.
So I will say, we talked about it a bit before, but I held my cards to my chest. I'm a Green Bay Packers fan.
Okay.
I want to ask you more about the Falcons.
I like your team.
Yeah. How do you feel about the Packers?
I like Green Bay. I mean, I always have. It's one of my favorite places to visit in terms of doing games. I mean, every time you go there, it's just this awesome experience, to be honest with you. And in 17 years of doing the NFL, one of the things, we're doing the road games virtually this year, and one of the things that really bothered me Monday night was not being at Lambeau Field. Just because I love the environment, and it was weird watching it with no fans there, because, and we've been there in October, November, and we've also been there, last night would have been the sixth time in 17 years we've been to Lambeau, and I got to be honest, I love going in December. In fact, I've got a picture that I keep on my phone of doing a local television hit before a Falcons radio broadcast up there 1 year when it was 7 degrees, and it was just great. And Lambeau is one of those places, it's like Augusta National for me, in that you have this expectation when you go, and you think there's no possible way it can meet your expectation, and it's just better. It's better than your expectation. And I happen to like the organization. Wayne Larrabee, who does their games, a good friend. And so I totally respect what they do, and I respect the tradition. I also tell people, Ben and Owen, that Green Bay, I get asked all the time, being very fortunate to do college and pro. I get asked by a lot of college fans around the country who aren't necessarily NFL fans, you know, where should I go to see a game? And I always tell college fans, you should go to either Lambeau Field or Kansas City, because I think those are the two most collegiate type environments in the NFL. And I guess you guys, Ben, you've been to Lambeau, I'm guessing?
I have, yes.
Yeah. So you know what I mean, right? I mean, if you go to a really great college football environment, that's kind of like Lambeau Field. You go to some places and it's more like, you go to LA and it doesn't feel that way. You go to MetLife and to see the Giants or the Jets play, and yeah, they're great crowds. Pittsburgh, the same type way, but they're more professional history driven crowds. They're not like Lambeau. Lambeau feels like it's an extension of the Big Ten in some ways. Kansas City feels like it's an extension of kind of the SEC and the Big 12, if you will, as we know it today, or the old Southwest Conference. So, the Packers are very good. Aaron Rodgers is phenomenal. I think Aaron Jones, vastly underrated. And last night, without Devontae Adams and Alan Lazard, Aaron Rodgers was throwing to a tight end who had caught 2 touchdown passes prior to the season, who now all of a sudden has 5.
He's the NFL leader.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Just bananas. You think about it, though, over the years, that guy's found – he's made millions for receivers who just showed up and hung out for a while. And they're very good. It's going to be interesting to see how the NFC plays out, because, needless to say, the East is a disaster right now. And it's going to – the North is clearly Green Bay and maybe a couple others. But going to be interesting to see what happens. But the Packers will be in the mix, I'm sure.
I'll keep you on this. I'm a Seattle guy, so let's get them a little bit into the mix here. They've looked good through 4, but – I'm not, entirely completely sold on that defense yet, but you saw them week 1 and just continuing that on.
You know what, Owen, it's okay to worry about the defense, but the offense is going to bail you out of a lot of games now.
Oh yeah.
I mean, Carson is phenomenal, and DK Metcalf is just a beast. I think his consistency, and it's funny, Steve Rabel, who does the Seahawks on radio, played football at Georgia Tech back in the 70s. So when I was at Georgia Tech for several years, I got to know Steve, and we stayed in contact. And, you know, everybody out there wants DK Metcalf to be Julio Jones, right? And he's going to be a great player. But in my case, I tend to look at Carson as a guy who's a difference maker for them, in all honesty. I think your ability to run the ball in the National Football League and do it effectively week in and week out is really probably a better measure. Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers are playing at an incredibly high level, ironically, for what it's worth, a quarter of the way through the season. I think that the MVP is one of those two guys. But in essence, you still have to be able to do the basics, and that's run the ball and tackle people. Seattle will get there. Defensively, I'm a little concerned about the secondary, not as much about the front, but the secondary is something that I think you probably got to keep an eye on. And, you know, you're in that division with San Francisco, who, if they wake up in time, has the potential, right? And if Garoppolo comes back healthy. I mean, I was as surprised the other night that Philadelphia went out there and won as anything. And I know Garoppolo didn't play and most starts gone and all that other jazz, but I still think San Francisco should have won that ball game.
So it feels kind of crazy to be talking football this naturally. We're through 4 weeks of the NFL, and we're entering week 5 of the ACC football season for most teams.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking back to March or even midsummer, what were your expectations for how the football seasons were going to go, both professionally and at the collegiate level?
Well, I will share this with you. I was with your dad and Jay and obviously everybody in Greensboro when it got shut down, right? And I remember Jay and I having this conversation about going to play golf somewhere in July. Well, obviously that never happened, right? So your point, though, is like, how does this all happen? Where do we go from here? And I'll be honest with you guys. I thought the NFL had a chance to play, right? I didn't doubt that the NFL would not play. I was a little bit more cautious or pessimistic, if you will, about the college game. I thought the college game was really going to have to do some things, because at the college level, we had a lot of different people involved. We had governors, we had chief medical officers in certain states. We had the difference between an institution being private and public. We had presidents, chancellors of those institutions, right? We then had athletic directors and football coaches. And I remarked to somebody in mid-July, I said, look, you got to understand something. This issue left the football coach in the AD's office a long time ago. And I think really the collaborative effort of the conferences is something that we ought to take note of moving forward, because it took a lot of different people. And, you know, Owen and Ben, look at it from the ACC standpoint. Look at the footprint of the league. You're going from New York State out to Indiana, technically with Notre Dame, back through Kentucky, and then down to Florida. Think about all the variances with the coronavirus, and think about all the variances with the institutions, right? You got state-based institutions in North Carolina, Virginia, South Carolina, Georgia. But in Florida, you've got the second largest state institution in Florida State. You've also got the number one private school in the state, in the University of Miami, right? You guys are a private school at Syracuse. It oftentimes turns into this puzzle. And that's really what I think had to happen. And in talking to some of the athletic directors, that puzzle had to be solved by both the presidents and chancellors of the institutions and their state agencies regarding the health, right? And I think that's why you're seeing variances, like, you know, at the Dome, there's nobody. At North Carolina, any of those four schools, there's 7% allowed. In Georgia, it's a little bit more than that. In Florida, it's 13,000 right from the jump, right, at Hard Rock for Miami, but no students. Louisville, it's X, and Notre Dame, it's Y. So, you know, we're just kind of getting underway. The NFL, like this coming weekend, will be the first weekend Atlanta's been able to have fans at Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the Panthers game. Georgia the other night said they had like 17 or 18%. I had a bunch of people say they're more than that in this building. You know, we'll know in 2 weeks, I guess. But I think we're okay. We've done well to get started. I think we have to also understand, this is a longer answer than I anticipate, we also have to understand we may not get it to the end in a conventional way. At the college level, we have 11 games scheduled. Everybody may not play 11. At the NFL level, we have 16 games scheduled. Let's be honest, we almost ran off the rail with that this past week, and it doesn't mean we're not going to run off the rail again. And when we do, you may not have the availability or the flexibility we had this week to get it done.
When you kind of look at the ACC's procedures in comparison to other conferences, how do you think they've done in terms of, you know, working things out? And Syracuse and their players had a lot to, you know, do with that and sitting out some practices and working for some increased regulation. So in your, you know, seeing the ACC compared to some of the other conferences, how do you think they've done?
I think everybody got on the same page, Owen, but to your point, it took a while, right? I mean, everybody – the other thing, too, that I don't think – and it's kind of funny to say this at 54 years of age. I don't think people in the older demographic thought the younger people would compare notes as well. Like, you know, what's going on in Florida State? Well, then nobody – is somebody at Florida State going to back check what they're doing with somebody who plays at, you know, Syracuse? Or is somebody at Virginia Tech going to talk to somebody that plays at Georgia Tech? Well, yeah. And some of that got started because of those type elements, right? And I think everybody had their best intentions, but there is a cost factor to this where, you know, it was an uncomfortable conversation on price point. Look, the NBA reportedly spent $171 million to create the bubble. I mean, that's not money's not laying around in the athletic department at John Wildhack's office, right? You just don't go, oh, I go to the closet here and get that $171 million to create this. I mean, so – every school has to get comfortable being uncomfortable with the financials on this. I talked to an athletic director the other day outside the ACC who said they estimate $75,000 to $100,000 is going to be spent almost weekly in testing once we get through football. The number of sports they have in the winter and spring is almost 20 or 22, and they think it'll be $75,000 to $100,000 a week to do the testing if it's 3 days a week and if it's an antigen test or if it's a PRC or whatever they call it. I mean, it's just the cost is really starting to add up quickly here, and some of those schools had to, again, get comfortable with the idea that this was going to have to be the way to do it in order to be successful.
From an on-field perspective, of course, the Big Ten hasn't started yet. The Pac-12 hasn't started yet.
Right.
But how do you feel the ACC has compared to the other Power Fives and other mid-majors around them?
Well, quarterback play has been exceptional. It's been as good in the ACC as it has in any league in the country. And it's the best – I think it's the best position nationally the ACC has right now. And I, you know, I can't say 1 through 15 is absolutely the, you know, the bottom line, but I think it's been pretty strong 1 to 12. I mean, you know, you go Trevor Lawrence, Sam Howell, Ian Book, on down. I mean, you could go pretty quick, and, you know, Malik Cunningham is – shoot, he's top five or six. You get Devin Leary at NC State, who's been fantastic in his only start against Pittsburgh. Kenny Pickett's been very good. I mean, Brennan Armstrong at Virginia is going to be fine. The Jeff Sims kid at Georgia Tech won at Florida State in his first start. I mean, there's all sorts of different positives about that position. The play as a whole has been okay. I think you've seen the rust get knocked off maybe in the first couple of weeks, and teams that had a tougher schedule, like Syracuse starting at Carolina, at Pittsburgh, that's not easy for anybody. I mean, right out of the gate to play veteran teams, if you're a team in transition, makes it difficult. I think NC State kind of showed you in a week span, you open with Wake Forest, you feel good about coming back and getting the win. Then you go to Blacksburg and you're thinking, well, we've got a game under our belt, so we kind of got an idea. And then Virginia Tech just takes the fight to you. So I think we still got to be prepared for the unexpected a little bit with this season, Ben. But I think the ACC's off to a really good start. I think the SEC's late start won't affect them as much as I have no feel for how the Big Ten and Pac-12 are going to pull it off, because you're trying to play eight games in basically 8 weeks. And you guys have seen how this has worked. I mean, you know, you go right to the wire on a Saturday morning with some games. I mean, Syracuse and Georgia Tech, you're waiting, what, 20 minutes to make sure a test is ready? And man, I, you know, that's a nerve. That's got to be nerve wracking for players, coaches, everybody involved. And I just think in the Big Ten or the Pac-12, you're going to have to really, really have it buttoned up in order to get through this thing unscathed.
Talking, you know, the top of the ACC right now, when you look at Clemson, they are, you know, they look as good as, you know, sure, they ever have. And Is there anyone, I mean, ACC or on the national landscape, that can really get in their way right now? Because they look phenomenal.
They do look good. I think it's a different Clemson team, though. And, look, Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne are spectacular players. Justin Ross and T. Higgins aren't out there catching, you know, balls, though. I mean, they're still developing that position for sure. I think defensively the middle of the field is a little vulnerable. And I think that's a challenge against Miami Saturday night, to be honest with you, because Miami has no issue with Derek King fleeing the pocket, and they have no issue throwing crossing routes, and they certainly have no issue trying to find tight ends and seams. So that'll be a challenge for Clemson. I look, the Tigers in Alabama to me, and once Ohio State, and I see them and feel confident about probably what they're doing, those three schools right there to me are the ones that, you know, are at another level, half step above maybe where everybody else is in college football. And it doesn't mean that others can't get there. Clemson is really, really good. And the reason they're good is because they've built this thing all the way through. They've got all the resources, all the foundations, all the things you need for, you know, to be successful every year, right? And you're just going to – I hate to say you're going to change the names, but like Trevor Lawrence likely will go to the NFL after this year, and then, you know, DJ Ungalele will come in, or whoever the quarterback's going to be. And, you know, and that's just kind of the way it's going to go at Clemson. And that's okay. But I think the encouraging thing for the ACC is that there are a lot of teams behind Clemson that have started to make discernible improvements to challenge. And one of those right now is Miami, because of De'Eriq King and Rhett Lashley's arrival and Quincy Roche from Temple. We'll see what happens Saturday night. But right now on paper, that should be a really good ball game.
Obviously, Notre Dame injects a lot of talent into the ACC that maybe wasn't there previously.
Right.
It's always been a weird situation where most of the Irish athletic department is in the ACC and then the football team is independent. Could you ever see this becoming a more long-term situation where Notre Dame is an ACC football team?
Yes, I can. And I'm not the traditionalist that I might appear to be at my age. But you have to know, Ben, that my dad and I, one of the biggest arguments we ever had was when the ACC went from 9 to 12. He was a true ACC traditionalist, and I told him as a dad, they've got to expand. Well, why do they have to expand? And, you know, next thing you know, we got an argument. My mom's got to clear the kitchen because I'm telling him they have to do it for football, and he's just, you know, he's off the end. He's really upset. But, yeah, I can. I can see Notre Dame joining the ACC, and it flies in the face of, like, everything, right? I mean, you know, here's Notre Dame, and we've got to play our traditional opponents. Well, your traditional opponents can be played, and we play 8 conference games, right? And you still got to swing on the house to schedule whoever you want to schedule. So, you know, don't – the traditional opponent thing really doesn't work for me, right? Because we're not going to play 10 conference games every year, I don't think. But I'm willing to say you can have 8 conference games. We'll take the division walls down. No Atlantic, no Coastal. We just rotate everybody, right? And then you can go play SC Stanford and the Naval Academy and then throw another non-conference game. And what's the problem, right? You're in the league. Financially and from a business perspective, and as Mark Packer likes to say on the show, you want to find out who's going to be successful, just follow the money, right? Notre Dame's going to make more money this year, guys, than they've ever made from football television revenues. And by the way, they're not even filling the stadium. They're going to make that money in a pandemic. Imagine if we were normal, right? So, yeah, that for that reason and that reason alone, I can see it. And I am I'm encouraged. I think it's important they be in a conference race. I mean, I joked after week one when Kyren Williams was the running back of the week. Congratulations, Kyren Williams. You just made history at Notre Dame. You're their first conference player of the week ever. I mean, you want to hold it on Paul Horning or Rocket Ishmael or Joe Montana or Joe Theismann, all these other – those guys weren't conference player of the week. You are. Way to go, Kyren. You know, you can wear your Notre Dame letter jacket and just walk right on in that monogram club and say, hey, boys, look at me. I was the first ever conference player of the week. But, yeah, I can see them joining the league. I'm probably in the minority there, but I'll add this too. Nothing I say, you say, anybody else says – is going to impact that. Notre Dame has to make that decision on Notre Dame's terms, and that's fine with me. And the other question I'm often asked as a follow-up to that, Ben, is, okay, so you got to have 16, so who's the next school? I don't know that you have to have 16 now. I used to be that guy, but I'm not sure that you do anymore.
If you break down the conference wall, then I don't think you need an even number at all.
There you go. See, and I think that's where we have to start thinking. We have to start thinking about the value of the tighter rotations in terms of conference games, right? I mean, Syracuse played Georgia Tech this year for just the second time since they've been a conference member in football. That's ridiculous. NC State and Duke, we had to have a pandemic to get NC State and Duke to play. I mean, come on. They're 16 miles apart, for heaven's sakes. And we can't get NC State and Duke to play. We got to do a better job as a league. And that's more important for the value of all the things that, you know, help people like us. Television games, all those type things, ticket revenue, sales, everything else, economy. I mean, but not, to answer your question, yes, I can see Notre Dame in the ACC.
To go kind of long-term here, you got 4 ACC schools now with Notre Dame in the top 10. If you look at the end of the season, you take, you know, Clemson, Notre Dame, Miami, and now North Carolina, do you think they finish in the ranking that they are right now, or can you see some mix-up happening?
So, Owen, you're telling me Carolina's going to beat Virginia Tech?
No, not necessarily. I mean, there are some big games. There are some big games. I'm just talking. You've got them in the mix too. So throw 5 now. Let's go to the top 5.
There is some degree of conversation that North Carolina might be overrated and Virginia Tech might be underrated. And since I'm guessing this is going to air before the game at some point, I'll just say that right now I can't say that I have Carolina in that. Carolina has to cross certain bridges.
Okay.
Carolina's got to show me you can win that game. You can win that game at home. Look, they're multi-talented. I think what the ACC has a chance for is Clemson and another in the CFP. The ACC, for the first time, in my opinion, has a legitimate chance to have a 0, a 1, and a 1. And when you have that, it really comes down to – the 0 winning the conference championship and the the one that doesn't go to the conference championship being strong enough that it finds a way into the back end of the college football playoff. And if you can pull that off in this year, that's a hell of a deal for the ACC. That will do more for this league than I think anybody realizes in terms of its college football. Because the league is already pretty good. The problem is that beyond the walls of it, not many people recognize it. But I think that, you know, right now you could say of the three that are playing, it's way better than the Big 12. Way better. I haven't seen anybody in the SEC outside of Alabama, probably Florida, but their first half of Georgia against Arkansas, I wouldn't have put Georgia in that group. Now, they looked better against Auburn last week, but is that Auburn bad and Georgia good? Remember, we were all ready to crown Mississippi State something after week one, too. So, I mean, it all kind of – it's the beauty of college football. We just have referendums every Monday, right? Oh, so, yeah, that's kind of where we are.
Well, one team that's had a major referendum, not this Monday, but last Monday, is the Syracuse Orange, who, at least here in the 315, everyone was way out on the Orange before the Georgia Tech game. And all of a sudden, they're way back in. What are your thoughts on Syracuse right now?
I think there's a lot of evolving that has to go on there, right? I love the secondary. Big Cisco guy, love Trill Williams. Melifonwu, I've always thought, was a really good cover guy. But what you're asking Tony White to do is come in there and put a brand-new concept in without a lot of practice time. No OTAs, no mini camps, no – summer workouts, no real full contact training camp, right? I mean, preseason practice is so different now. And then offensively, I think Sterling Gilbert is really good. And I'm a big Dino fan anyway, but I think you had to get some health situations worked out. You had to find a way to get, you know, Service and Vettorello involved, make sure they're healthy and ready to go. And Tommy's got to get confident. I honestly believe that at times last year he lost confidence, and I think some of it had to do with getting hurt. I think he got hurt in the ball game I did up there a year ago against Western Michigan. And maybe it lingered through the year. I don't know. But the other thing, too, was there were always going to be kind of, you know, these opt-outs or distractions and things like that. And to be honest with you, I think schools – and teams have to get comfortable with those guys. Pittsburgh got comfortable. I was impressed in doing back-to-back games at Pittsburgh with how comfortable Patrick Jones and Keyshawn Camp and Rashad Weaver and even guys like Paris Ford were with Jalen Twyman's decision to opt out, right? And how they still talk to him and support him and understand why. But sometimes it doesn't go that smoothly with your teammates, and it can be a void that's created. I'm not saying that happened at Syracuse, but I think you've got to get used to it if you're going to be on the team as to kind of what's happened. Look, Syracuse has a hard schedule, a real hard schedule, and they need to take advantage of it. And they got one against Georgia Tech. See if they can regain the momentum a little bit, build on that momentum. It's a long season, guys. We're still early. That's the thing Roddy and I were talking about last Saturday at Pittsburgh with the NC State Pitt game. It's hard to believe we're into October, but we haven't played that many games yet because we started, you know, the second week in September and not the first week. So let's just see kind of where we're going here. You still got a couple weeks to get to the midway point, and I think it'll sort itself out a little bit. But I know people were disappointed after the 10-win season to have last year's result, but I'm actually optimistic kind of about the process they're going through because I think a lot of schools have to play the long game in bringing a program back. And it's funny, we talked about Clemson earlier, right? People have forgotten that Clemson gave up like 70 in the Orange Bowl to West Virginia. I mean, like 70. And that precipitated another change. And 2 years later, then Clemson started to become what you know today. But that 70 in the Orange Bowl to West Virginia, a lot of people don't even think about that anymore with Clemson. And every program has to have that moment, I think, on the downward swing to propel them back up the hill.
You talked about, the tough schedule for Syracuse. Is there a matchup that you see lingering for them where you think they've got the upset potential maybe?
Ooh. You know what? Let me cheat and pull up Syracuse's schedule.
Yeah, do your thing.
I certainly think they can beat Duke. I certainly think they can beat Liberty, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they're feeling good offensively, I'll say this. The home game with Wake Forest and BC is going to be interesting. Those are games right there. BC's playing with a lot of confidence and momentum at 2-1. Now, how does BC play Saturday against Pittsburgh? What kind of game is that? Because now you got a Pitt team that's been beaten. And here's what we do know, Owen. We do know that if you lose once in the league, you're still survivable. But if you lose twice, you complicate yourself and everybody else you're competing with. So then you've got to get in that group that needs help. Like, you've got to have somebody beat somebody, and you've got to either – if you lost the head-to-head with another two-loss team, that's almost like having three. So, to me, if you're Syracuse, you're trying to get to 3-2 going to Clemson on the 24th of October. And then you get Wake Forest at home and BC at home before a bye in your last three games. Now, you're not given any favors in your last three, at Louisville, NC State at home, and at Notre Dame. That's the Notre Dame in December could be like the Weather Channel game of the week now. I mean, you know, think about it. There could be 7 inches of snow on the ground at South Bend. But I think Syracuse could get Louisville, maybe. But Wake and BC would be good wins now. Don't, you know. Those are the type games, and remember a year ago you played BC up there, and I think A.J. Dillon and David Baylor are still running. So, I mean, I did that game. Holy smokes. I think that's what you're looking for. You're looking for those type games that can push you to five or towards six wins and get you in a situation where you feel good about what you've done in 2020 to get you ready for 21.
Syracuse plays Duke this Saturday. They enter the game as 2.5-point underdogs. I think a lot of the feeling here is that SU's the favorite.
Wow. But
according to ESPN, they are not the betting favorite right now. What's your feeling on that matchup?
I actually like Syracuse. I mean, I think Duke does some good things defensively, but Duke's been the turnover kings. I mean, Chase Bryce has been inconsistent. Offensively, they are puzzling. And after watching a little bit of the Georgia Tech game, I saw Syracuse give me some things out of their defensive front, which I thought was encouraging. The young linebacker Thompson played well, I thought, in the ball game against Georgia Tech. And I liked the response I got from Syracuse after two losses, to be honest. You're not cashing out, right? The young running back, is it Tucker, right? Yeah, I mean, he played very well. And I'm encouraged. I am. I still think you got a guy who can break the game apart in Taj Harris. I still think, you know, you've got a really good offensive line, and it's about taking the smaller steps here. I would say I'm surprised you're Duke's a favorite. Duke's a favorite in the game?
That's the ESPN line right now, has Duke -2.5.
Ah, ESPN, what are we doing? What are we doing? That's
can
not
I trouble
my
you for a score prediction?
No, you're not good. Come on, Ben, you're not getting that. Nice try, though. I mean, I think Syracuse would win the game simply because they're at home, too. And I know it's empty, but still, I'll go back to travel. Travel's for a football team now. Travel's not, hey, by the way, here's your bag of lunch, get on the plane deal. And plus, you never know, like we were talking about, you know, you have the Georgia Tech game where you're sitting there waiting 20 minutes to figure out who's going to play. But I would say, yeah, I would like Syracuse on Saturday against Duke for sure. I like Syracuse in their next two games. I like them to be 3-2 going to Clemson, to be honest.
So you got them 3-2. How many more wins can you get them? You know, we'll talk ceiling, we'll talk floor. What's the range for them right now?
4 to potentially 6. 4 to potentially 6. Remember now, everybody's eligible for a bowl, Owen. Don't start holding me out on I can't go postseason somewhere, right?
You're good.
I would say you get the 3 at home. I mean, I stranger things have happened, certainly with Syracuse and Clemson. Wake or Boston College at Louisville seems to be hard. NC State at home, you don't know. Devin Leary looked really good last week. I've got them against Saturday, so I'm curious to see kind of how that happens with them. How do they handle the success of last week? Because remember 2 weeks ago they didn't handle it very well. and then that game at Notre Dame at the end. 4-6. And I think you got to think about how you feel about the 4-6 too. You've installed new defense. You've installed new offense. You're not an old team by definition in college football. You're going to lose some obviously key players, but yeah, I think you could certainly get to 6. Absolutely. And maybe, who knows, you get a flyer maybe to 7. But that means, you know, you're going to upset somebody, or you're going to draw a game where there are a lot of guys down, or something like that. So the next couple of weeks, I think, will be very, very important for Syracuse, because if you get to 3-2, it's safe to say that they would feel entirely different about themselves then than they did after the first two games. And the one thing I've learned about college athletics is the mentality and the confidence levels can be really, really helpful to teams turning things around. And it doesn't matter who you beat, it just matters that you win. And I think sometimes we get lost in the nuances of Syracuse being a 2.5-point underdog to Duke, which is still crazy.
Well, Wes Durham, voice of the Atlanta Falcons, host of Packer and Durham, and voice of college football and basketball for the ACC Network, thank you for joining us. Make sure to check out Wes on Twitter, at Wes Durham, and we hope to have you on again soon, maybe with a over 500 Syracuse football team.
It'll be Owen's fault, because he's the one that made me start predicting floors and ceilings here, Ben. You guys take care. It was fun. Thanks for asking me.
Thank you, Wes. Have a good one.